Daryl coming up at 12:20, so we'll talk to him in about 19 minutes. He's our Browns beat reporter, but he does so much more. And we'll
does
talk to him coming up
does it all
in a little bit. All right, so one of the things that's kind of been churned through this whole conversation as we talked a little bit about maybe a LeBron 3.0, but is Darius Garland, his value, his worth. And, you know, Jeff, you had talked about this, and Dan, and we talked a little bit about this too, that LeBron has a podcast out there too that he does with Steve Nash. And Kevin Durant was on, if I'm right, right? So Kevin Durant was on with primarily, it sounded more like it was Steve Nash that was doing all the talking in this conversation with him too. So, but they started talking about Darius Garland and, you know, just his role, an undersized guard. What does that mean? You know, what's the value of that, especially coming from a guy like Steve Nash? So let's hop into some of these. So the first one is Durant. On the value of an undersized guard, correct?
Audio courtesy of the Mind the Game podcast, which is LeBron James and Steve Nash's podcast. He used to have J.J. Redick until he became the head coach.
Oh, that's right.
6'2 and under guard is at a premium no more as a starter. Maybe as a backup, but you have to be.
We just talked about this the last night.
It's gotten compressed.
It has.
Right? It's compressed.
Yes.
It's at like either Donovan Mitchell, Drew Holiday, 6'3".
You can't get picked on defense. That's the thing, because we play in such a pick-on game that they will really, literally, if you can't guard, they will bring you up every play.
Every
6 foot, 6'1", and you're not a bulldog like a Davion Mitchell, Drew Holidays on the defensive side, or you're not an offensive flat-out savant like Kyrie, where you can score on dudes 7 feet easily in ISO, then I just can't see it.
Mm. How did we get here, Jeff? How did we get to this point?
We didn't. I think it's been this way for some time. Cavs made a trade thinking maybe old school and not looking ahead. I mean, look how long guards are in the NBA now. And I mean tall. Mm-hmm. Not just tall. You know, defensively, you know, the wingspan that should be arm span because they don't have wings.
Right.
But these guys are big guys, and the game is now played by bigger, stronger, faster people. And I think those guys are right. You know, 6'1 starters they're hard to come by. And do you win with them? Well, in the regular season, you sure can. In the playoffs, still to be determined. Seriously, the Cavs could do it, but they'll be bucking a trend that two of the best players in NBA history, three, say, yeah, that's not the way you do it anymore.
Interesting that if you just kind of look at the height of position in the NBA, point guards average around 6'2.5. Shooting guards average, you want to guess?
6'4.5.
So you're right there. Yeah, and so I you know what they're saying makes sense, and it makes you kind of scratch your head on what's going on here as well. They also talked about Garland in particular in this situation.
He is, and it's like, but the defensive side of the ball is where, you know, people were attacking. Mm-hmm. If you want a chance to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, you are going at Darius Garland most of the time on the defensive side.
Mm. He just came out and said it.
Well,
and we see it.
It's
we watch
nice
it.
That he said it, but we all see it.
Right. You know? We do, because I think
and
we watch
they
it.
Certainly all see it.
So what does that mean? Like, so what does that mean for the if everyone knows it, everyone sees it, and we're sitting here just a segment ago talking about his value and what he's worth across the league? I don't know. How does that raise his value? I don't see that.
Andy, you're preaching to the choir here.
No, I know, and I'm not complaining.
I thought this from the minute they made the trade. Great, you have two outstanding players. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think, and I'll say this. I think Darius is getting a bad rap because though his defense is not his calling card, I think he's a very, very good NBA player. What I don't like is the fit. And that's kind of what these guys are saying. You know, I mean, if you have one shorter guard and he's your point guard, okay, well, you can play team defense and help him out a little bit.
Right.
You got two shorter guards, you got an issue. You have a 6'5 small forward playing next to him in Max Strus, Mac's tougher than you know what, but he might be guarding a 6'10 guy. That's not good. I mean, look at Orlando next year. Orlando's going to have a center, whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have 6'10, I believe, Franz Wagner, 6'9, Paolo Banchero, 6'5, Desmond Bane, and 6'5, Suggs. Jalen Suggs is tough, former football player.
Mm-hmm.
How are the Cavs going to defend that? Doesn't mean they can't win. How are they going to defend that?
You just got to score 132 points. That's all.
Exactly. That might be how you win.
It makes sense. All right. Nash also chimed in on Garland.
Darius Garland, like, he's an amazing basketball player. We don't talk about him as like just amazing, like, because the era, like, if he played in any other era, I think, sure, he would have been like, his value would be through the roof.
Yeah.
Like, he's that skilled, he's water bug, he's got every shot, he can play make. But it's an era where it's like, okay, we also have to help that dude out defensively all the time.
Yeah, I mean,
like, that's an example for me because he's such a good basketball player.
Yep.
Man, that Nash Canadian accent sounds like he's had about 15 packs of cigarettes.
He sounded like that his whole career.
No, I know. I'm just, I haven't heard from him in a while.
He's missed you. He wants you to call.
No, I haven't heard him in a while.
Oh,
not heard from him.
I'm sorry.
And by the way, this is the home of Canadian basketball here, right? If you're Canadian, just let us know. You'll get drafted in the first round by the Cavaliers. The era point, I think, is well taken.
Yeah.
What would he have been like? I don't know.
Well, he's great now.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit.
He's the asset. And we sit here and we debate this. Like, in one hand, you hear Steve Nash say, he's a great basketball player. He's great. Water bug. He's good to the hole. He can score.
Get any shot he wants.
And then 2 seconds later, people are like, well, he's probably the guy you want to trade because it's not working with Donovan Mitchell. Or it didn't work great during the regular season, and then it's just not working in the playoffs.
They're looking to win an NBA championship. And if you have, and Donovan's pretty scrappy, you know, and I think Donovan is a better defensive player than Darius. Would we all agree on that? Donovan's a better defensive player than Darius?
Yes.
But you still have to help him sometimes, you know, because he might be going up against the shooting guard who's 6'6", 6'7", 6'8".
So what does this mean for 6'1 guards then? What does it mean? I mean, you got a great basketball player. And
it's a bad fit. It doesn't mean they can't win.
Bad fit here.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting for me to hear so many people saying, boy, those two small ball dominant guards don't fit well together. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I mean, it's been obvious for some time. It doesn't mean you can't win a ton of basketball games. I just think it means it could, and has, made them susceptible in a playoff series. And can they fix it? Maybe. You know, I mean, a lot stranger things have happened than a team with four really good basketball players of whatever size winning an NBA championship. I mean, could they do that? Sure, they could do it. But it would be going against the grain.
Here's your catch 22, and this is the situation that they find themselves in. In the modern NBA, everybody wants to switch everything on defense, which is part of what gets you into the trouble that Kevin Durant is talking about. And by that, I mean they, you know, bring up big guy, pick and roll, switch him onto somebody else, go to work. Weakest defender. That's the way that they want to do it in the modern NBA. It's the best way to guard the pick and roll.
And all of a sudden, Darius is trying to guard Ben Carroll.
Exactly. Or we'll use the example, Darius Garland is on Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Advantage Durant.
All day.
Because Durant is a freak of nature.
Back and down.
Unbelievable.
Put up a five-footer.
The problem we're going to run into is how many 6'5 to 6'9 freaks of nature do we really have out there that can play basketball and fill it up the way that they can?
You know how many? Enough that they're still going to be playing in the playoffs as the Cavaliers try to advance. And that's what's going to happen. And we saw it with Boston.
Are they?
Maybe.
I mean, you're right. We're working in maybes here. So let's operate on paper.
The guys
that'll be said is on paper.
The guys who were good ones, you would think, are still going to be going.
Can Jaylen Brown lead the Celtics to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Might not have to.
Why?
Cade Cunningham lead the Pistons?
That was the next one I was going to go to.
Yep. There you go.
I mean,
there are enough of those guys out there, Dan, that they're going to run into this situation again.
But are there an Eastern Conference? Especially next year.
Yeah.
If you're telling me we're looking at this on one-year windows.
You just said Brown. I laid out Orlando.
I don't think Jaylen Brown could do it.
Okay, I don't either. Okay. But by himself.
Right.
However, Orlando, they can do it. The Knicks.
Tell me when Jalen Suggs is healthy for an entire season and Franz Wagner learns how to shoot again.
Good. Go for it. Cade Cunningham.
I love Cade.
I do too.
You and I both love Cade.
He's a tremendous basketball player.
Tell me when J.B. Bickerstaff runs an offense.
If he's going to go and try and go heads up Cade Cunningham against Darius Garland, he might not have to.
You need something to get you there, though.
Well, ask Caris LeVert.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying.
But that's catch-22 of this, though.
Yeah, but what everybody needs to remember, we have a team here in Cleveland that hasn't been able to get out of the second round of the playoffs. And we also have a star player who's never made it out of the second round of the playoffs.
Right, and we're all looking at each other going, we're SOL, when in reality,
no, we're not SOL.
The door might be open. Okay, you good. Might that makes able- me happy you said that.
Well, no, I just said that. I just told Andy.
Yeah.
I just said, hey, could they figure it out? Sure, they could do it. They have four really good basketball players. Five. I'm going to throw DeAndre Hunter in there. They have five really good players. Really good. Can they figure it out? Sure. But I don't think they can figure it out without adjusting roles.
I don't know. This all would have been a lot easier.
Sitting in crunch time.
This all would have been a lot easier if they just would have got by Indiana, right? Well, I mean, you would just listen to Tom talk about the expectations this team had for this year and how he was all on board. And we all saw what we saw during the regular season. And then...
If ifs and buts for candy and nuts.
I know, but I also, I feel like I'm making this argument for everything right now, but it feels that way that, hey, Indiana was a better basketball team than the Cavaliers were. And that's just a fact. At the time they went head to head, they were a better basketball team. I don't know what the Cavs would have looked like against the Knicks. I don't know what the Cavs would, I mean, a lot of what ifs right there. And there's a part of me that really wants to come back with this core four next year and not tweaking it, not sitting here talking about LeBron James.
Gotta tweak it.
And not, I don't know. Jeff, if you go back and look at the regular season, you could make the argument, hey, let's just make another run at this and try to do something different.
Well, no, they've already tweaked it. Lonzo Ball, Larry Nance.
Okay. So is that enough?
I'll say maybe. Seriously,
is that enough?
Darius is a really good basketball player.
I want to see year two of Kenny Atkinson. I want to see what he's got up his sleeve.
I hope they can develop Jalen Tyson. I'm not going to jump the gun on Proctor. Okay? Tyrese Proctor, can I go Shedeur Sanders?
Yep.
There's a reason Shedeur was there in the fifth round, and there's a reason that Proctor was there at pick 49. So don't think that Tyrese Proctor is the answer to anything, because that's not fair to him. However, maybe they can develop him. I think Jalen Tyson is much more likely to be a factor for this team next year than Proctor. I mean, that just makes common sense. And then you go from there, Andy. I mean, these guys are really good, but is really good enough? And do they truly believe that what they have can win a championship, and that the big issue was injuries and not roster makeup?
Before we go to break, Dan, going back to what you said about you want to see year two, right?
I have an update I don't think you guys are going to love.
Oh, great. Keep going.
Luis Ortiz?
It is Luis Ortiz related.
Okay.
92.3 The Fan. Breaking news.
Courtesy of Zach Meisel and Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic, Guardians pitcher Luis Ortiz has been placed on non-disciplinary paid leave through the end of the All-Star break as a result of an MLB investigation, with multiple sources telling The Athletic that the probe is related to gambling. Multiple sources telling The Athletic that the probe into Guardians pitcher Luis Ortiz being placed on the non-disciplinary paid leave is related to gambling.
Well, all right. There were three things you kind of figured it might be.
Yeah.
Gambling was one of them.
Yep. So that's what we're hearing now. We'll have more on that when we come back in a second. Darryl Ryder, our Browns beat reporter, is going to join us next. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Let's welcome in our friend Darryl Ryder.
Brought to us by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store.
He is our Bronze Beat reporter. Daryl, have you calmed down now? I shouldn't say calmed down. That's not the right word. Has your blood pressure gone down?
It might
be better.
Yeah, it might be right.
I mean, you've been covering the Dome story like nobody else in town. I'm just going to say
it straight up. Great work, dude.
I mean, all over it. And now it's like, are we at the finish line? Are we at the midway point? Where are we on this thing?
I think that once they get the I's dotted and the T's crossed, they're headed to Brook Park. But almost home. Big domino fell earlier this week, and they're almost home.
What's left, Daryl?
There's a couple of things. Some of it procedural with the city of Brook Park. They've got to get that land rezoned so that the Browns can build this complex on it, because as of right now, they wouldn't be allowed to do it. So the city of Brook Park's working with the Browns to get the zoning aspects of it taken care of. You've got the finalization of the financing that has to take place. Of course, they've already closed and purchased the land, so they now own it outright. Then there's the minutia of who's going to own the stadium and who's going to be responsible for maintenance and upkeep once it's completed and open for business. So there are a lot of things that still have to take place between now and the time that they ultimately break ground in the first quarter of 2026. But come 2029, the Cleveland Browns are going to be playing football in Brook Park.
All right, Daryl, this might be silly. What they're going to build is what we've seen on all of the fancy designs and videos and graphics and everything, right? The plan is already designed. It's good to go. That's it.
Yeah, well, the Browns were smart, and they got the FAA already to sign off on the design. Of course, this thing's right next to Hopkins Airport, so the FAA does have to sign off of that because of height restrictions around runways. So that piece of red tape's already been cut. They're currently working on finalizing the traffic plan around the complex, and also to assist with the airport as well, because you certainly don't want to overwhelm the airport when major events are going on over there. The dome and phase one of this complex will the mixed use development, I should say, will be completed in time for the NFL season in 2029, and then phase two of the complex will get constructed afterwards, depending on just how successful phase one ultimately is. But the Browns have committed to building, I want to say, 75% of the promised mixed use development. And that's going to cost around $800 million to do it. And then the rest of that would ultimately get built at a later date. Again, it depends on how the market accepts things. But it's going to be a mixed use development with retail and restaurants and apartments, housing, hotels as well, not only to service the dome, but also, we'll be able to service the airport as well. The first phase of the development will include about 450 hotel rooms, just under 600 apartments, just under 100,000 square feet of what they call traditional retail, and then an additional 140,000 square feet of experiential retail, which is going to include like a team store and other retail concepts. So that is what phase one is going to look like, and then they're going to have two hotels out there as well. So. And some office space. So it's a pretty pretty big complex there that they're going to put in. But again, phase one, as well as the enclosed stadium, all that's going to be done by opening day 2029.
All right. I know no one's asking this question, so I'm just trying to think. So do we know 100% that the city wants to demolish the stadium, the current stadium? Like, could they something else with it if they wanted to?
The city wants it gone.
The city 100% wants the stadium gone once the Browns move out.
Why would you keep that stadium?
I don't know. I mean, you could. I don't know. Like, in Chicago, like, they lopped off rows. I mean, look, when they lopped off rows at the ballpark. I mean, if you thought you'd get an option for a soccer team or something like that.
Yeah, there's no reason. And the women's soccer team is going to build their stadium on the Metro Parks land that is south of the Gateway Complex there on the other side of the Interbelt in Orange Avenue. There's no reason to keep that stadium there. And I think that it would behoove the city to work with the Browns and find a solution to get that thing down as quickly as possible.
You think that's going to happen? Nothing quick happens, Daryl.
Yeah, nothing quick happens around here. We know that. What I hope does not happen is we get 5 years into the Brook Park thing, right? We get into the early 2030s, and that stadium is still sitting there empty and deteriorating and it really becomes an eyesore. So hopefully, the city will do a 180 and actually work with the Browns to get that thing down and to position that land to be repurposed for either public or private use.
Yeah, I have visions of Warner Swayze, that factory that's at 55th and Carnegie. That's still now. I heard that they're supposed to do some stuff after the first of the year, or maybe later this year, to try to get that thing. But that thing, I drive by that all the time, and it's been like 30 years. I think that thing's been open and it's still sitting there. That's my problem, is that I have visions
of the stadium sitting there forever.
Yeah.
I'm hoping the city's going to be motivated to get that thing out of there. And especially because you have the Rock Hall, which is undergoing a I forget how many hundreds of millions of dollars they're spending on the expansion that they're currently building right now. You've got the Science Center there. What they need to do is that lakefront area. You don't need to close Burke Lakefront Airport. You really don't.
No, you don't, right?
Right. Leave that. Just leave the airport be, and then go ahead and turn that area into like the Chicago Pier. Put a Ferris wheel down there. Put some other smaller amusements down there. Put some retail and some housing, apartments, and someone will make a fortune if they build some condos and apartments down there. And things like that. So it's a beautiful view that is just basically gone to waste thanks to that stadium being where it's at and the fact that there's parking lots all around it. And you can create a destination for the Rock Hall and for the Science Center. Right now there's nothing to do down there. when you finally make your way down East 9th Street, walking over the Shoreway Bridge there, there's really nothing to do once you've done the Rock Hall and the Science Center, and you can create an entire experience down there once you get that stadium out of there. So based on the comments that Mayor Justin Bibb has made in statements and publicly, it sounds like they are working on a plan to repurpose that land in a post Browns stadium timeline.
Daryl, are the Browns under any legal obligation to help the city get rid of the stadium after 2028?
Nope. Their only legal obligation is to return the building in proper condition. And obviously the city is obligated between now and the end of the lease to continue to maintain the stadium and make the necessary capital repairs. Certainly, they're not going to do any renovation to it and, sprucing up. But, when things break, I mean, I know one major issue that they have on an annual basis is dealing with concrete, whether it's in the seating bowl, whether it's on the ramps or the concourses. They're going to have to continue to maintain that. You've got all the mechanical systems in that building that still need to be maintained and whatnot. So, that's really where the obligation lies on both sides of the fence. But no, the Browns have absolutely no obligation to help the city of Cleveland do anything.
Hmm. Are we just counting down the days now? I'm ready. I mean, now that we
know. Four seasons to go, Andy. Not that I'm keeping track.
What did you say? Four what?
He said four seasons to go.
Oh, no, I wasn't talking about the stadium. I'm actually talking about the team itself.
Andy's thinking team.
Oh, what are we counting down to?
To the beginning of camp. Now that we have the dates, I was
scared. Yeah, no, I'm not. No, no.
Well, no, I just think it's interesting. But you know, the fans. What are we?
You
looking
can. At? I'm not. I've got 2 weeks of vacation before I even think about.
I keep telling him this is like when you walk up to a kid, Daryl, and go, "When do you go back to school after summer vacation?"
Hey, you just got done with school. Are you counting down to next year?
Well, going back to school for the fans.
Are you counting down to your first day of school for your next grade?
Daryl, do you think it's weird? All right, I'm done with this. Listen, they only have 8 open training dates.
Was it something I said?
No. They only have 8 open training dates for fans to go watch this year, which seems really small. I'm just wondering once the other project they're working on, which is in Berea, which looks fantastic, I wonder if they're going to open things up a little bit more now that they'll have another stadium on the other side, or because I feel like the fans, like it used to be, you got to go all the time, and that's kind of made training camp drag out a little bit longer. But now it's so limited for the fans to go see training camp.
Well, that I haven't been out there yet, but that area is probably a construction project right now, or construction zone. Number one. Number two, remember, they're going out of town twice, Carolina and Philadelphia. One practice with the Panthers before their preseason game, 2 practices with the Eagles before a preseason game. So that contributes to the fact that fans are going to go a whole month without, you know, being able to go out to a practice and you know, watch the team. We're usually used to training camps wrapping up around the middle of August, around August 15th to between the 15th and the 20th of August, and now it's going to be August 4th. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know how much fans are really going to be seeing from a practice standpoint because there is that ramp-up period. Practices will be, I think, around an hour and 15 to start out, and then each day they'll get a little longer and a little longer and a little longer. And you know, there's time before they can even put on the pads. There's time before they can have contact. You know what I mean? Like, so, the practices that are going to be open to the fans are the lighter practices. So, it'll be interesting to see how Kevin Stefanski handles those, but, there's a lot of reasons why they were only able to do the 8 practices. Eventually, when they get that District 46 built, next to the facility there in Berea, they do plan on having night practices at the new football stadium. They're community field. It's a football stadium, but they're calling it a community field where Berea Mid Park is going to play football as well. Seats about 7,000. They're going to have some night practices because it's going to have lights on it and stuff like that. So I think that's going to be a unique experience for fans. If they're able to do a couple of those. So I just think it's going to require the next couple of years, Andy, a little patience from folks that have become accustomed to going out to a lot of training camp practices. You know, I think they're intentionally paring those back a little bit because of, you know, ongoing construction. And then once that whole complex gets built, I think maybe they can do a little more than they already have, because I think that ever since the Haslams bought the team, they've done an outstanding job hosting training camp. I think they'll be able to do even more for fans once they get everything built up out there in a couple years.
And, Daryl, when is that expected, the stadium in particular?
2027. Okay. So they're aiming, there's a building, the University Hospital Sports Center that they're going to build, which is also going to house the Browns multimedia department as well as a new stadium sales area. That building they're aiming to have up in 12 months and up and completed in 12 months, which is entirely doable because, I mean, they did that expansion, that beautiful expansion, the weight room and the VR and all that kind of stuff that they did on the back of the field house there. They got that up in 6 months. So it's entirely possible they're going to get that building up. But David Jenkins, the Browns chief operating officer, said that they've expedited that specific building to have that up in 12 months. And then the rest of that complex will be completed in 2027.
I'm also kind of wondering, just for a touch, I wonder how much more they'll use that other stadium. Or I know you want to call it community field, but man, it'd be great to see the Browns like host a weekly high school football game there, especially.
Well, Berea Mid Park High School is going to play there. That's going to be their new home stadium.
And it's going to be turf, or it's going to be grass.
It's going to be turf. Yeah,
I would not be surprised if a second school wanted to go in on that too. That wouldn't shock me at all.
Well, and it's not just a football stadium. I mean, they're going to be able to play soccer and lacrosse and other, you know, other, you know, sports that are used on those fields.
Oh, so Berea's moving everything over there? All of their sports? Or is it just football? I would think it was just football.
My understanding is just football, right?
Yeah, it would seem.
But I'm just saying that the way they're doing the stadium and the field is that it's going to be able to be a multi-purpose facility used for more than just playing football games.
That'd be cool. I also hope they bid on playoff games for out there, too. That would be cool, too. Especially if it's 7,000 seat stadium, it's perfect.
I would just keep ears peeled for any interest the Browns might have in Ohio High School Athletic Association
events. Yeah,
football.
It makes sense. I mean, they put all this time back into. Look at all the fields they built around town that I don't even think people know.
They're still putting them in, too. They put in two a year. They try and do 2 to 3 per year. So.
Gotcha. All right, Daryl, thank you. We appreciate you. You're a good man. Don't tell anybody.
You bet. Stay away from the fireworks tonight. Keep all your fingers, okay?
Thank you, Daryl. You're a good man. Good man. All right, Rick Manning's going to join us at 1. I've got an anxiety question I got to ask you about when we come back to Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Guardian starter, Luis Ortiz, on leave. Now because of an MLB investigation. So, and then we just came through with,
according to multiple reports.
Well, he's on leave. There's no question on that.
Yes.
I haven't said why though. I didn't give you the multiple reports. I didn't just now.
Oh, though. You didn't?
No, I didn't say why. I
was a preemptive, according to multiple reports.
Oh, my bad.
That it may be gaming related, right? Not fair. We can say that because multiple reports are saying that. Are we good? Are we worried about, we were worried about every word we said before this one.
I'm still slightly worried about it, so I apologize for cutting you.
Okay, but other people are reporting that it might be gaming related. I'll just leave it at
that's
that.
That's like gambling,
ESPN,
right?
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate you. All right, can we just have a little just non-sports conversation here for a couple seconds, even though we are sports talk. But so Jeff and I had this conversation.
Sports talk according to reports.
Yeah, according to reports. I don't know why this came up yesterday. So there a couple like modern technology anxiety things kind of went through my mind over the last 24 hours.
Dude, what about anxiety doesn't go through your mind?
Anxiety itself. Maybe it's the song. By the way, I love that song. I think it's a great song. So two things. Like yesterday, I asked you this question. It was just out of nowhere. I said, if a pilot walked up to you on an airplane.
And we were walking back to our cars after the show, and Baskin drops this on me.
So I say to Jeff, I go, like, if a pilot walked up to you and said, hey, oh, Jeff Phelps, love the show, blah, 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 or whoop-de-doo sports review, like, it's all a part of my adolescence, and I appreciate everything you've done for me. And the pilot walks up to you and he says,
jerk.
Jeff, come on up. Sit in the cockpit for a little while we're flying the plane to wherever. Would you do it? Would you go sit in the cockpit while the plane is flying?
And I said,
and give him the answer.
I thought about it.
Yeah.
And then I said, yeah.
You would do it.
Yeah.
But for the experience or for the, I mean, like, just because it would be something you've never done before.
I figure I'm in the plane anyway.
Okay.
Can't get any scarier than thinking, yeah, I'm several miles up in the air and really not supposed to be. This thing's that heavy, and they got these two things hanging out on those wings that are too heavy to be hanging, and the propulsion has me going through the air here. Yeah, as if that's not scary enough, it doesn't get much scarier, so why not?
Okay, so now you're going. Dan, are you going? The pilot walks up to you and says, hey, come on, sit in the cockpit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just for the thrill of it, I want to see
you're
how this
already
works.
Yeah,
why not? I mean, if you're going to invite me into somewhere I'm not supposed to be, I'm going to show up and I want to see it.
I got
to
be.
What are you going to do? You're going to sit in your seat. You're going to go squeeze yourself into the bathroom, or you're going to get a chance to go up and watch the plane fly.
Anxiety of that just drives me crazy. I am so happy that there is a wall between me and the pilot that I don't want to know how the hot dogs are made. And my fear would be to go sit in that cockpit for a couple seconds, and then I would bump into something, and I would mess something up. That like I have no desire ever to sit in the cockpit of a plane while it's in the air. I'm so happy to be detached. That's a magic room up there that makes stuff happen, and I just want to be the happy guy in the back.
You really think that you could do something that would make a plane immediately drop 30,000 feet out of the sky?
Yeah, what happens if while they're walking you up there, we get unexpected turbulence, and now all of a sudden I can't stand, and I fall into something, and then it gets even worse. I don't want to be that guy. I am happy sitting in my seat, locked in on the plane, not going anywhere.
Enjoying your
honey
roasted peanuts.
So I've been lucky enough to be on some smaller planes. I'll leave it at that. Right?
Lucky enough.
Yes. And when the pilot walks out of the back,
Andy knows rich people.
Every once in a while, this happened. When the pilot gets up to go to the bathroom or get something to drink or to talk to somebody on the plane, the only thing going through my mind is, who the hell is flying this thing?
Otto, we've covered this.
Yeah, I know. So that takes me to the next point.
Otto Worf?
So hi, Otto. We were talking about this morning because, you know, it's really cool. Obviously, you can listen to the station anywhere. And we were talking about new places where you can listen to the station. And, you know, now we're with that with iHeartRadio app. So if you go there, you can find us there. And then Keith was saying how that these cars they have that are now self-driving have computer screens in front of them that if you want to listen to us, you can just go. And then he's like, yeah, check out Waymo. Now, you were in Arizona, and there were Waymos there?
Oh, yeah, they're all over the place in Phoenix.
Now, I got to tell you, another thing that freaks me out, getting one of those cars. It's autonomous ride. It's not like Tesla, right?
It is legitimately a self-driving car where the robot is driving the car.
Oh, man. I mean, I have enough anxiety of myself driving, and at least I feel like I have control of the car. Now we're going to hand the control of the car over to the robot. I think I thought of this the first time I took my foot off the accelerator when I was on the freeway using cruise control going, man, I don't know if I like this.
I don't like cruise control either.
I'm not a big cruise control fan at all. And obviously you can see why by my you know, anxiety about flying in planes and then, you know, getting in a car so Waymo is in like some major cities already, Los Angeles, Phoenix, San Francisco, Atlanta, Austin, and then they're coming soon to Miami and Washington, D.C. I was just checking that out this morning. Dan, explain Waymo to folks.
So it's kind of weird. You see them all over the place. I have not been in one, but I have fallen down this wormhole on numerous occasions because I'm both scared and fascinated by the same exact thing. So what they are is they're self-driving cars. You see them, they kind of got this weird, like, it almost looks like an old school police light on the top of it.
Uh-huh.
And so you get in there and you type into the computer your location, you know, where you want to go.
So first of all, you go to your cell phone to call.
Correct.
The
you go to your cell phone to call it. You type in your location where you want to go into there and it will take you there and it follows all of the rules of the road. It does all of the posted speed limits and it will get you where you want to go. Like driving with traffic and everything else. And the robot drives the whole thing. And it's been successful.
I don't mean to be this isn't funny. Didn't one of those cars, not necessarily that brand, I don't know anything about it, but didn't some self-driving car hit and kill some poor woman?
Yes, yeah. Those have happened.
Yeah,
there have been incidents of those things, and they update the software, and they continue. They go into these cities and ask permission to bring them in. And then when they get into there, they do that stuff. And so there's been times where the Waymo has gotten into accidents, and they've had to update the software and go from there. There's been times early on where that took place. That has not happened in a long period of time, thank goodness. And hopefully it doesn't happen from here on out.
I don't know. I'm watching the video of this thing, and it's kind of like, I think as kids, we all kind of expected some of this stuff to happen in our lifetime. And now, you know, it's happening. I don't know. We all have the visions of the Jetsons, right? Being their gigantic apartment in the sky. But every futuristic movie, everybody lives a million miles up in the air, right?
Yeah.
Think about it. I think about all of the sci-fi stuff. It's people, no one's on the street anymore. Everyone's in the air and everyone's flying around.
Takes care of weeding.
Well, that's a good point. Well, no, the weeds are still growing. You still got weeds. Jeff, we can't get away from that.
I got 2001 A Space Odyssey in my head right now through the whole Waymo thing where I'm going to type an address and it's going to go, I can't let you do that, Dan.
Yeah.
And I'm just toast and locked in there and done for. And you're over here going, don't have to pull all of that ragweed.
I can sell my lawnmower.
Don't have to worry about the dandelions.
Where do you live? Cloud number 14.
Oh, nice. 14 Cloud Lane, is that what you're saying?
Heard it's nice up there.
So, Jeff, you saw this Waymo thing. Would you get in it?
No, absolutely no
way. You would not get in it.
Nope.
And, Dan, you were thinking about it, but you didn't do it when you were in Phoenix?
The lady friend was like, we're not getting in one of those ever. Because she was wired the same way you are. She's like, I don't trust the robot. I don't trust the computers. I don't trust any of it. I'm not doing it. I think I would do it because I feel like I'd have to give it a shot. But I wonder how far I would go or if I'd want to go in the highway on it.
Other than one major decision, your lady friend's really smart.
friends like these, man. Friends like these.
I don't know. I look at this thing and I'm just like, it gets rid of drinking and driving, though, doesn't it?
It depends.
Very much so.
What do you fuel it with?
Yeah, they're electric cars. Are
they all electric?
Are they retrofitting normal cars with this thing, or is it?
I don't know, and no, I think it's a completely new built car.
Okay.
I have no idea on, you know, I think it's its own specific car that's built with the stuff in there. Like, I don't think it's like they took a.
If it's self-driving, why would you even want to be?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm not going to lie.
And if you're self-driving, why would you even want to be in a car that looks like a car? Wouldn't you rather be in a. In a car that kind of is like a suite, so you can put your feet out and kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Perhaps they're building it because that's the way it has to be built in order
for
to
now.
Work. Yeah,
I don't know. I'm just looking for the. I wouldn't have any problem getting on a train.
Would you get in one of those? You wouldn't get in one. Okay, good.
I'd be super. I'd be freaking out the whole time.
I'd be so tempted to jump over and get behind the wheel and.
I think if I was trying to get from one area of town to another area of town without going on the freeway, I think the freeway part of it would freak me out there too. Like all of a sudden you're in this, you're trusting this. But I mean, we trust airplanes to go.
But there's a person there flying it.
But most of the time it's on autopilot, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you don't have to make too many left turns up in the air.
Yeah, but you still got to circle down, don't you?
Very rarely is another plane coming at you.
You hope, knock on wood.
I said very rarely.
Thank you. Rick Manning, you know him, you love him. My favorite center fielder growing up. Guardians TV, he's with us next. It's Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.